This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. It's been a great show so far. If you listen to the show, you're very bright. Very bright. Tell your friends to be smart as well. Do we have Steve there yet, Anthony? Oh, yes. This is one of our favorite times of the day, of the week, really, when we get the chance to talk to Steve Young. Steve, it's Michael, Don, and Peter. Happy New Year to you, my friend.
Happy New Year, fellas. It's great.
You think Aaron Rodgers played his last game with the Packers?
I don't know. It sure feels like it, just from reading the tea leaves, you know. Felt like people, players knew there was like a moment. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, it feels that way. He said, one thing about Aaron, he's pretty vulnerable. He's pretty honest. You can just, okay. Like or hate, you can say whatever you want about it. He's not hiding anything. Doesn't feel like it. And so in that way, I think he's going to take some time, try to figure it out exactly what he wants to do. Do you want to make the emotional commitment? But it did feel yesterday like there was this sense that, you know, people were saying goodbye.
And where would his likely place be if he decides to extend his career?
I think the most likely thing is that he doesn't play.
Okay.
Wow. And I don't think it's likely. He, to me, the way it's set up to get traded and find that spot and work out the money and all the rest of it, I don't know. I think it's either the Packers or retire. I don't suspect. Well, everyone is suspect. Oh, he's going to go to Tennessee. He's going to go to New Orleans with pay. He's going to go to Denver. He's going to go, not Denver, but, you know, there's all these stuff. It's like, no. Now, could he come to San Francisco and kind of come home? Yeah, it's possible. But now with Brock playing well, I think he's going to be a Packer or he's going to retire.
You know, it's interesting because he said this too. I mean, his money is guaranteed for this 3-year deal. He's due to make
$60 million next year.
$60 million bucks, he said, you know, I have enough money. I mean, Warren Buffett wouldn't walk away from $60 million. You really see him walking away from $60 million guaranteed?
Exactly. Have you not listened to him the last couple of years?
He is a little odd.
I mean, he's not odd, but just he's definitely going to do the things that are going to be what he sees as the most healthy for him emotionally, long term. Yeah, I mean, but the other thing, forget about making this decision today.
Right.
Make it in April, because I used to every Thanksgiving I was retired. I'm like, I'm never going to come do this again. And then every April I'm like, oh, I love this thing. I'm in. So like it ebbs and flows. So you don't. Whatever he feels today, he needs to wait a month or two, and then I know he doesn't feel like he has that time, but he needs that space to make sure that he makes the right decision.
Now, I think Mike LaFleur is gone. If you're going to bring back Zach Wilson, you can't have the same coaching around him. If they do decide to let Mike go, Steve, who do you think should be the next offensive coordinator and could maybe fix Wilson?
Okay.
Is Kingsbury a guy?
Hold on. Wait, let's go backwards. Because remember, we have to mourn the passing of Greg Knapp, who got run over by a distracted driver, which was part of the solution that was part of how he was getting drafted. And how I'm sorry about that. Mike and Zach needs somebody who's he doesn't need tough love. He doesn't need somebody to like see how tough he needs someone to you know, he needs a big brother and a young, knowledgeable, innovative, someone who can trust and says to him, you know what, despite everything that's happened, Zach, I believe in you. You can get this done. Zach needs that. And Mike kind of kept him at arm's length and gave him the tough love aspect, and I just don't think it's really useful for Zach. If he stays, they've got to fix that. That's not working, and it's a broken relationship. It's a relationship that needs mending, and that's on both of them. If they do let him go, I would say that Cliff Kingsbury, yeah, I like that idea. I like that. I need somebody who's going to because Zach's problems are not physical. Zach's problems are expectations and how he deals with expectations, and that comes from every direction and all the things that come with playing and playing great football. And he's got to figure out a way to process all the expectations so it doesn't affect his play. And that's a process that's going to go on. I don't think it's not hard. not hard. It's not long. It's not long suffering. It just needs to find. It's growing up. It's maturing. It's figuring out how to deal with the stuff in front of you.
I've got to stop you for 1 second. Was that a cognizant decision by LaFleur and company? Let me keep this kid at arm's length when he needs love. I mean, that's ridiculous. Why wouldn't some of the other coaches see that that's not the right way to deal with him?
You know what, Michael? You know this. Humans are people have their own psyche, their own way of dealing with stress and pressure and what they think is best to coach. And what, you know, everyone has their own way to do it. And it's not one way. Everyone's got different ways. It's just interactions of different humans and how they respond. And I can tell you that those two didn't respond to each other. And that, I guess you can put it on both of them, right? That's just the way it is.
Can I push you a little further, Steve, on the, because you sounded sort of similar to what Robert sounded like earlier on the show. Maybe I'm just not very bright. I don't really understand what you mean in terms of the expectations part. What is it that Zach is expecting, and how is he handling, you think, or showing his difficulties with said expectations?
Yeah, all right. Okay. So, first of all, what they decided at the end of the year is really the right thing. Works hard, tough-minded, good teammate, wants to do well, and talented. So, that I don't think that's not up for debate. What is up for debate is the ability to process how you. Oh, jeez, we more than a radio show here. We gotta like, but he needs to. He needs. How do you deal with the things that are in front of you that are very difficult and challenging, and not let it get into your head as you go to deliver the football? Yeah.
Now, I've got to ask you this. If Steve Young is running the Jets, can you come back with Zach Wilson as your presumptive starter? Or do you have to enter next year as Zach Wilson as your clear backup to a veteran quarterback?
Look, I think every reason to let Zach go was in place, right? Whatever the relationship was broken, they'd handled it in a way that created all this negativity in the locker room, negativity from the fan. I mean, it was terrible. I mean, it was as terrible as it could be. So if you've now stepped back and decided as a franchise, okay, no, we're going to look into that abyss and we see a way forward, then you got to feel like the things that are missing, the pieces that are missing, can be fixed to become productive this next season. If it's going to be a four-year project, I don't think they would have made this decision. I think that they feel like they can get things kind of righted. Mm. Now, do you have to have somebody? Yes, you do. You just have to right now. But I think the bet is that, and I think, look, what I said, did they listen to? No. But what I said is right, that if you're going to go up against Joe Burrow, Josh Allen, or Patrick Mahomes in the AFC over the next 10 years, you better have somebody who has the closing ability to go make these things happen like those guys do. Now, if not, then somebody else would like that, because otherwise you're just going to wander around like the Jets this year, like the Baltimore Ravens, like, name them. There's 15 teams that are roaming around that cannot pierce. They can beat those guys, one of them. They can't beat all three of them. And that's what they're going to have to do every year. So I think the Jets made that decision based on that.
And you know, we were just talking to Robert Saleh. He's like, he's only 23 years old. Where were you when you were 23? And it keeps coming up in conversation all the time, Steve, that fifth-year option for first-round quarterbacks. And you just wonder, does it do more harm than good? Because you're forced into a decision. Back in the day, all right, we'll bring in a veteran. Let Wilson what? You have to make decisions so quick now. Look what happened with Sam Darnold. Like, they had to move on to another quarterback. So I know what was negotiated and all that, but does that rush organizations into maybe sometimes making poor decisions on their quarterbacks?
Yes, of course it does. But the other problem is how difficult it is to find. Well, what I just say, Joe Burrow, Josh Allen, and Patrick Mahomes. This is the era of those three battling it out. Look what this AFC champion, look what's happened. I said that a few months ago. Look, here we are. So how hard is it to find those guys? There's three of them in the AFC. There's maybe one in Jalen. Maybe there's two in the NFC. Like now that if you say Tom and Aaron are going to retire soon, like so there's five or six in an era, and you got to go find one. That's what I'm saying. So yeah, everyone's making mistakes and picking people and trying to find those guys. And when you get a handful of them, three of them, they're young and going to be around for 10 years. That's the bind the AFC's in right now. Now, Justin Herbert, if he can get the help, can join them. Then you have four, you know, bashing each other the next 10 years, and everybody else is watching from the sidelines. And so if the Jets are going to be somebody, they've got to find that. And that, of course, you make decisions and you have to move on quickly and not. Like, I think the Jets are doing smart things here to give it some space, to air it out. Because otherwise they're going to go back to square one, be with the other 26 teams in the league that don't have an answer like those guys and are desperate to try to figure it out.
Steve, is it possible that the 49ers could win a Super Bowl with Brock Purdy, the last pick of the draft?
Yes, and the reason I say that is that you're going to think because I'm a 49er, I'm a homer, and oh yeah, I'm telling you, Kyle Shanahan is this generation's genius offensive coordinator, play caller, innovator. There's three or four of them. Andy Reid, right there, right? Andy Reid doing it for forever. Sean Payton, wherever he lands, another guy I would feel that way. Sean McVay, a little, you know, would feel that way. There's others that are up and coming, you know, LaFleur and O'Connell and Sirianni. There's guys around. Even the guy in Detroit, interesting. But there's only one guy that's supreme. And what he does, and look, he has a lot of weapons now with McCaffrey and Debo and George, but it's how he calls plays and creates an environment for a young quarterback or Jimmy G or someone, or, you know, to thrive. And he does it it's very tailored to the quarterback. It's tailored to what they're good at. And he's able to create trouble for defenses and make it easy for that quarterback to do the things he's good at. And so I marvel every week. Yesterday, you look at what he asked Brock to do. I mean, I was like, oh, I would love to be in that spot, you know, to be able to get the throw it and have the guy run for a touchdown, a little swing pass, or like he just attacked in such unique ways that it's going to, in the NFC, I can see them easily going to Eagle, you know, going through the next couple of 3 weeks, going to Eagles and winning. But then they're going to run into Joe Burrow, Josh Allen, and Patrick Mahomes. And then you're going to have to beat that guy one time. And I say in the NFC for the next 10 years, yeah, I can beat one of those guys once. And so, yeah, that's possible for sure.
All right, so I don't want to be negative here. So if he's as brilliant as you say, he took the last pick in the draft and he's gone 5-0 with him. Why did he empty the bank to get Trey Lance? He could do that with any quarterback.
Michael, it's so easy to sit there and like they're saying that he fundamentally said to all of us,
right,
Jimmy's my quarterback and I don't necessarily want to ride that into the future. So we're going to go all in to find the, you know, like you said, three number ones to move up to get to that spot. I firmly always believe that that was for Zach Wilson, but, you know, we'll never know. So they get Trey Lance because they're all looking because they're these innovative young coaches are going to say, my career is going to be defined by my quarterback. Everybody, that's true for all of them.
I've got to stop you for a second because this is the money question. If Zach Wilson was picked by the 49ers, would he be struggling?
Less for sure. It's the job is significantly different here. Different talent, different everything. But that doesn't mean that, like, that doesn't mean that, that Zach's not, you know, hit Zach's issues. Like, he needs to deal with Zach. I mean, this is not about blaming, because this is really about Zach having to grow and mature himself. So certainly been easier. Who knows how it worked out? No question. Would have had much more support from a young. Look, the idea was you'd have a veteran quarterback that had coached me, coached Peyton Manning, coached Michael Vick, coached so many guys and Greg Knapp. He was going to be there to be the ballast. That was the plan. So don't blame the Jets. They had a plan, and he got run over by a distracted driver 2 days before camp a year and a half ago.
We've been kind of battling a little bit with Viking fans over the last couple of weeks. I think they're a good team. I do. But that -3 point differential, is it wrong to say I think they're a good team, but they're just not a 13-4 team?
Well, there's a few of those running around. I mean, I would take the Lions over. Not a lot of teams in the NFC right now that are in the playoffs. So I think that the season's so long now, through the preseason of September, now bleeding into October. The machinations of a group of guys coming together takes time. And I think they feel like the Giants have gelled, and the Vikings have gelled offensively, but they're terrible in defense. Just terrible. And if they could stiffen up, they could beat anybody. But I agree with you. They're just not put together. And if the Giants can maintain control and do their thing, right? It's they got one or two gears, the Giants. They don't have five or six, but they have one or two solid gears. And if they can get in those gears and stay in there, they can pound the Vikings. But if the Vikings, they're never out. They're always going to score some points. And so how does that Giant defense keep them under 28? You know, because I don't, if the Giants can go in and score 35 on the road in the playoff game, great. But it's going to try to hold down the Vikings.
So who do you really like right now in an NFC championship game as of January 9th?
If the Eagles can get righted and get back to that momentum, because they have a top two or three offensive line, as long as Lance comes back, the top two or three defensive line, and the defense can. So to me, you book that with Jalen back full speed and everybody humming, mm-hmm. then I think that, you know, you advantage Eagles. But without that, it's the advantage 49ers, because the 49ers are so good defensively, and that offense is just, they just eat you up however you want it. They're going to, you take it however you know, and then they're going to be able to put 28, 35 up in any place that they go.
But would you agree that if the two top teams in the conference are one with a quarterback who may not be right and another one who's Mr. Irrelevant and we haven't seen play any super meaningful games yet, do you think it's a year that's ripe for a random team to potentially slide through?
I just feel like both the Eagles and the 49ers are built more, like if it was about the quarterback being, you know, they're built from the ground up. And they're better than everybody else from the ground up. Now, as the quarterback, create an environment where it makes it a place that you can topple them, but you're not going to topple them from below. Like they're going to be tough to beat no matter who's quarterbacking them, and that's why I think that they have the advantage. But yes, so in other words, they're not propped up by the quarterback. Neither team is propped up by the quarterback. Both teams are solid, fundamental from the bottom up, and in that way, tougher to beat, especially if either of those quarterbacks play decently. And that's why the Giants are going to be, it's going to be challenged. So it's not, this is not the year to go, oh, we got them. But, the Giants are solid. I'm not going to disrespect anything the Giants have done. And can anybody get to the top of the NFC this year? Yes. Could anybody get to the top of the AFC this year? No. It's just a different conference.
My last question, Steve. Have you ever seen an ascension like this? Daniel Jones was not given the fifth-year option. And now we've had experts come on. He's going to get paid anywhere from $30 to $40 million a year next year. Can you believe that? Is he a great quarterback or potentially a great quarterback?
Did you see the difference between Jalen Hurts from year to year, Tua? Did you see when people get coached and get supported and get a place that – gives them a chance to be their best selves. Mm-hmm. We've talked about Daniel all year long, was just bound up in perfectionism, trying to do too much. The ball was flying around. It was in a doom loop. And the doom loop you couldn't get out of it. And suddenly somebody comes in and says, stop. Stop the madness. Stop the doom. We're going to simplify it and build from there. And I think it's been a masterful job of coaching Daniel Jones to give him a chance to develop into whatever the full measure of who he is. It's what I love about Patrick Mahomes. He's always trying to get better. Who's the full measure? I mean, forget about the MVPs right now. Daniel Jones can now go find out. We don't know exactly how high it's, but it's serviceable right now for sure. And how good can it get? It's kind of fun to think about.
Do you salivate a little bit that you'd probably make $55 million a year if you were playing?
Yeah, no, it's a whole different one. But I remember I was playing when you were making five or six or seven. That was unheard of. Guys were making 50 grand, you know, it's generation before. You're like, so it all goes in. It triples every, what is it, triples every 9 years or something like that. It just never ends.
And you had that LA Express money, too. You had that LA Express money.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
An annuity, right?
An annuity. I remember my mom. She told me, she let you know. I know he sucks, but it's an annuity, so it doesn't like he's not. It's not like he lost all that money up front. It takes some years to lose this.
Right.
So he's going to have to suck for 40 years, and then it'll be really true.
You know, we talk about evaluations of players. You just mentioned, you know, what Jones has been able to do under Daboll, what quarterbacks have been able to do under Shanahan, and some of these geniuses, Andy Reid. If you're listening to this interview right now, as one of the coaches that had those quarterbacks and it didn't work, how do you get better as a coach? Is it just pure talent, or is there something you're missing that you can't get to that level?
Don, you guys are killing me today because this is a long – I have a lot of answers for this, but it takes a little bit to kind of build to it. I'll do it quickly.
I'm sorry.
You're talking about different – it's a different paradigm. It's how you see the position, and I want to tell you it's as different as Bill Walsh and the West Coast offense back in the day with his toolkit that he put together of all his audio, paper-based, and video-based – everything he knew in a toolkit, handed it to Mike Holmgren, who handed it to Andy Reid. And if you look at the coaching tree from that spirit of giving you all that I have, all that I'm, all my innovation, and then you go build on it, you do better than me. I'll see you in the championship game. Bill Walsh turned to Mike Holmgren and says, I'll see you in the championship game when he left for Green Bay. No, it was true because he handed him all the knowledge that he had. He gave it to him at the height of his career, gave it to these young coaches to go be successful. Ray Rhodes, he did it before the Rooney Rule to try to help his African-American coaches find jobs before the Rooney Rule. And he gave us to kind of say, look, I want to give you the best chance I can. Bill was just a very forward-thinking guy. So all those coaches from that tree, including Sean Payton, have come through this spirit of how to be innovative and think about the quarterback in a unique, different way. And now you're seeing the full measure of that from all those trees, from how they see the world. What you're seeing where it isn't true is where it comes from another place. And I hate to make it binary, but it feels like it is. It feels like unless you've been through that abundance, that I'll call it, and the spirit of like innovation and really understanding the uniqueness of the position, doesn't need to be coddled. I told Robert Saleh, it doesn't need to be coddled, but you need to understand the position is completely different than anything else on the field. And so for me, that's what I would say is go learn from those guys that have come through that, you know, that paradigm of thinking about quarterbacks in a different way and study under them. Spend a summer or off season. Just be there and try to glean what you can. If I was any coach today, I would go, if Kyle Shanahan would give me a month and just let me follow him around, that's what I would do immediately.
Good stuff, Steve. Enjoy the first round of the playoffs.
All right, boys. Sorry about that. You asked me weird questions, you get weird answers.
No, I'm sorry.
No, we're weird people.
I want to take advantage of your intellect.
Thank you, Steve.
You guys, good luck to all. Good luck deciphering all that stuff.
We will. And Joe Douglas is next, the GM of the Jets. So stick around for that right here on Yes at 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And Joe Douglas certainly done a good job restocking this roster, and he's nice enough to join us right now. Joe, thank you for coming on. Just wanted to know, losing six in a row at the end, how much of a disappointment is the season, or do you look at it in a positive way?
I haven't got to the positives yet, honestly. It's been a tough few weeks, I know once you have time to step back and look at things, and I'm sure there's some silver linings in terms of some of our young players, some of the performances we have. I mean, just think about Quinn and some of our rookies. But obviously, you touched on where we are, and you know there's some issues we need to remedy moving forward. And now I'd much rather be talking to you guys much later in the month or even next month, but. You know, we got to get together as a group, have some hard conversations about why we got to this point, and build an off-season plan moving forward off of that.
So obviously the number one issue, Joe, is your quarterback situation. Is it a personnel problem or a coaching problem?
Look, I think if you go back and think, I mean, sure, are there things we could have done better? Just in terms of helping Zach, I'm sure there are. But, you know, I know you guys talked to Robert, and I'm going to echo a lot of what Robert said. I mean, obviously we know the talent that Zach is. It hasn't blossomed to his potential yet. We're not giving up on his development. So we're going to a big conversation moving forward when we talk about improving the team is the offense, the every single position room, and how we can upgrade this team moving forward, just the entire team. And I think when you talk about the last few weeks that we've had, you can't pin it just on one person. So I think it's like I said, we have to have some difficult conversations about how we got here and build a plan accordingly.
Joe, usually somebody in your position doesn't like to deal in hypotheticals, but I'll give it a whirl. The way Zach has performed in these 2 years, if he was your fifth-round pick, would you completely just cut bait? Or the fact that he's the second pick in the draft, you have to make this work?
Well, you know, again, you brought it up. Like, I'm not a huge hypothetical guy, but I would say this, like – it doesn't matter if you're a first round pick or a seventh round pick. You know, we want to see a player's development through, and we don't want to make knee jerk reactions after 1 or 2 years. You know, I know Robert talks about it. I believe it as well. You want to give these guys time to develop. You know, Coach talks about 3 years a lot, and I agree with him. A lot of these young men that come into the league, they don't all develop at the same rate. You know, I think you've seen some rookies come in right away and light the world on fire. You've seen some guys take a long time. You know, sometimes they end up taking longer than their rookie contract. So we're going to do everything in our power to help Zach reach his potential right here.
And, you know, another dilemma that was created by you in a positive way is how quickly this defense and the weapons developed to put you in a situation where now you could make a solid case, Joe, you're easily a playoff team with the weapons you have offensively and with the defense that's been built here. And that's probably put even more pressure on the development of Zach, because all of a sudden this year you jump from, you know, a team with a top five pick to a playoff team.
Yeah, look, I think we had a championship caliber defense. I think you saw that week in, week out. And I think there was a level of consistency there that we need to develop on the other side of the ball. And again, it's not just one position. It's not just one person. And so how can we build that kind of consistency and production on both sides of the football?
Quinnen Williams today said, and, you know, he obviously wants to get paid. So how do you proceed with this?
Yeah, I mean, look, we love Quinnen. Obviously a tremendous year from him. I mean, double-digit sacks, unbelievable person, unbelievable teammate. And, you know, we want Quinnen to be here long-term. You know, again, we're still in the very beginning stages of our off-season plan, but that will certainly be a topic for us as we put this off-season plan together. And, you know, obviously Quinnen is the right type of person, right type of player, and we want to keep those guys around.
And the other dilemma, which is also attached to the offense, Joe, is the offensive line. Just your evaluation of it, and can Becton be a part of this moving forward next year?
Yeah, I think this is a really big offseason and really big year for Mekhi. Obviously, that goes without saying. I think it's going to be important for him to be here, to come in the OTAs and offseason best possible shape he can be, hit the ground running. And you know, if he's in the best shape he can be, and he's in a good place, you know, his odds of staying healthy long term are going to grow exponentially. So a big off season for Mekhi, and just in terms of the offensive line, obviously when we talk about consistency and stability on the offense, that's certainly a position where we didn't have a lot of consistency and stability just from a starting lineup standpoint. You know, I don't even know the number of different starting lineups we had. It seemed like we had a revolving door at tackle, but we need to get to the point where, you know, the best offensive lines in the National Football League, they play together consistently. They're on the field together consistently, and we need to get to that point. And we need to develop that level of consistency. If we're gonna achieve our goals, so that's gonna be a big thing moving forward. And you know, obviously, it's always a priority for us. And we didn't have the stability and consistency that we needed this year.
Joe, I'll ask you a question that we asked Coach Sala as well. You know, it's out there that you have an owner that some might interpret as meddling. You know, he wants what he wants. He wants to make decisions as well. Do you feel pressure? Is he unhappy with the way this team finished? And does he impact decisions by you and Robert?
Well, I think obviously we're all unhappy about how the season played out. And, you know, we're all competitive. Woody's very competitive. No one wants to win more than Woody. But I think at the same time, he's given us a lot of support. And when I was talking to, the press today, I referenced this past offseason. You know, we went out and we made a lot of moves in free agency, and he supported us through that, through those decisions. And so I feel like he's been very supportive of both me and Robert. And look, we need to finish, like Robert said. We need to finish games and finish the season.
Are you comfortable going into next season without a veteran quarterback, Joe, or do you want a veteran quarterback to battle Zach for that spot?
Yeah, I think, like I said, we're going to get together. We're going to put our plan together. Obviously, that room is going to be a topic in how we handle the offseason moving forward. Look, there's going to be a lot of different avenues to address that room. You know, we have two quarterbacks that are going to be unrestricted free agents, and Joe and Mike. And so we have some decisions to make. And I can tell you, whatever decision we make, it's going to be in the best interest of this team and this organization. But again, we're in the infant stages of putting that off-season plan together. But we are going to explore every possible avenue to upgrade this entire team.
Joe, I don't know if this is a question for you, but you're the one in front of us right now. So, you know, Mike White seemed to be a favorite of that room, that locker room. And when he became the quarterback and had that great game, the players get on a plane where Zach Wilson is on that plane, Joe, and they're wearing Mike effing White T-shirts. Is that something that you disapproved of? And could you see how Wilson could take that as a slight of him?
Yeah, you know, specifically, like I honestly didn't even notice that when we were boarding the plane. But look, in any situation like that, you try to put yourself in another person's shoes. But look, I do know that Zach has teammates that have his back and that do think the world of him and support him. Me, Robert, the entire organization, it's our responsibility to do a better job of supporting him as well. So that's going to be what we talk about moving forward.
Did he cause so much damage, though, Joe, when he did not take the blame? And I find it unbelievable that everybody got their nose out of joint because he didn't take blame after the Patriots game. I mean, one little thing like that, it seems like it would have to be so much more that would anger an entire room.
Yeah, look, I think if you talked to him after that game, he would tell you, he shouldn't have said what he said. But I think every single time he's talked and had an opportunity to speak, whether it's to his teammates or to the media, I think he's done a remarkable job. And so, look, again, bottom line, no one's been perfect in the way that's played out, but we have to just moving forward, do whatever we can to help Zach get better.
Now, as far as decisions with any coaching staff beyond Robert Saleh, is that a group effort or does Robert make a call? Like, how does the chain of command go if you do decide to make decisions under Robert Saleh?
Yeah, Robert and I have a great relationship, and when he's thinking about something, he asks me questions. When I'm thinking about something, I'll ask him questions, and we bounce ideas off each other all the time. Ultimately, when it comes to Robert and his staff and how he wants to manage games and any type of decision like that, I fully trust Robert to make the right decision. So, look, we're going to have conversations. If he has questions, he's not going to be afraid to ask me. I'm going to give him honest input. Ultimately, Robert's going to take information and make the best available decision he can.
Did you have one most frustrating moment this season? Well, maybe the Patriot punt return, or last week with the season on the line, the offense not showing up. Was there one moment that really, really hit you throughout the year?
Yeah, I think it's just really the culmination of the last 6 weeks. And I talked a little bit about the pressure, like specifically regarding the O-line. We had the fourth quarter that we had in the Buffalo game at home, with a banged up group, banged up backfield, and we're still able to control the fourth quarter, have a great sustained drive running the football. And you think that, okay, I think we might be over the hump here, but that just wasn't the case. So now we just got to go back and just see where the missteps were, where we can get better. But obviously, the culmination of these last 6 weeks, it's not where anybody wants to be.
Final thing, Joe, Sauce Gardner said yesterday, we are going to be in the playoffs next year. Do you agree with him?
Absolutely, I agree with Sauce. And I love his mentality and his makeup and his competitive nature. And look, I mean, right now, it's like I said earlier, it's hard to focus on the positives, but there are positives. Sauce is definitely one of them, and the way he carries himself and the way he competes and the way he handles everything. And I think we've got some young men on this team that are going to be the foundation of this organization moving forward. I think that one of those people is Sauce. And I love that he said it. I love his swag. I loved it from day one. And I do think he's one of the guys that's going to help propel this organization to where it needs to be.
Joe, we thank you for coming on. We thank you for always being so amenable with us, and good luck in the offseason.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right. That's Jets general manager Joe Douglas. We'll talk about what he just said when we get back. Take your phone calls as well. Kay, LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Listen, I can't read too much into tone. He's obviously very disappointed, but I think we can read that he's not happy overall. I think he's certainly locked in with Saleh, which I agree with. All those that are calling for Saleh to be fired, I don't get it. I don't understand how people expect a coach to be fired in 2 years and then you bring in somebody else who's going to turn around quickly. It's just not. It's not. You saw what happened with the Giants. Three straight coaches gone after 2 years. It's not a recipe for success. But the Zach Wilson thing and the Woody Johnson thing, I think the question I asked him is true. If he was a fifth-round pick, he'd be cut. The reason he's coming back is they have too much invested in him optically right. to take a number two pick in the draft and release him after 2 years.
Can I ask you guys something?
Sure.
I'd like you both to take a crack at this. Because, again, I might not be bright and I'm misunderstanding.
True.
My head is, thank you. My head is spinning about the whole Zach thing. Can I ask each of you to tell me what you actually feel? Like, tell me a little story about what happened to Zach Wilson this season. What is the real version in your eyes of what happened?
I think he's a fragile guy. And with Steve Young, who has a close relationship with him, they didn't give him love. It wasn't goo-goo coaching. It was hard coaching. And they kept the distance from him. And he needs to be stroked. He needs to be a guy who's loved. And they didn't have that guy. It seemed like LaFleur was doing the tough love act. Because I think the skills are there. The guy could throw a football. It's all in his mind. That's what I think went wrong, Con.
Well, and you also were trying the experiment of a first-year head coach, first-year offensive coordinator, first-year quarterback. I mean, you're really putting yourself at a disadvantage, right? Now, the Greg Knapp passing, that certainly put a damper on things. But we're talking about a quarterback's coach. All right? We're not talking about an OC. We're talking about a quarterback's coach. It's got to go beyond that, guys. I'm sorry. Mike LaFleur had to do a better job developing his quarterback. What did Steve Young say? Take a look at the quarterbacks that are flourishing. Who are they flourishing under? Does Mahomes become what he becomes if it's not Andy Reid as his head coach? No, it doesn't always work. Would Purdy be doing what he's doing if he didn't have Shanahan as his head coach? So I do think Robert Saleh is a good coach. But is he the right coach for a young quarterback trying to develop into this league? Was Mike LaFleur the right OC for that? If you're going to invest so much in a second overall pick, guys, and that's why I think this offseason is so very important, they've got to bring in somebody with a pedigree to work with this kid. Just bring him back for the sake of bringing him back. That's all it's going to be. If you don't have the right people to bring something out of this kid, yes, maybe there's a chance he just doesn't have it and they just screwed it up and got it wrong. But I'm more on the side of it's there. They got to find out a way to crack the code. That's why I think at the very minimum, you got to bring in a different OC that can do that. Now, who is it? Is it Kingsbury? Is it somebody? I don't know. But they just can't go with neophytes all the time, guys. You know, Gase was the offensive guy last time, and he had a cup of coffee as an intern in Miami. You know, you've got to bring in somebody with some experience. This is too big a job. It's too important.
But does it seem, and this is no disrespect to the man at all, that the success of this whole project was on a guy that wasn't even the offensive coordinator, Greg Knapp? The success of everything hinged on Greg Knapp?
I mean, it almost, if you didn't know any better, you'd feel like it's just an excuse.
And I hate to do that with a man who lost his life so tragically. But I just don't get it, Peter, how everything could hinge on an assistant?
Well, look
an
how
assistant,
much...
not an assistant, an assistant to the offensive coordinator.
But see, you're hitting on something here, Michael. Who was the big guy they brought in to help the development of Sam Darnold? A $10 million backup quarterback. Why don't you go out and get coaches that are about offense and developing quarterbacks? Because that's where the wins and losses are. That's where it is. I don't care. You could get the Steel Curtain defense, the 85 Bears, and the 2000 Ravens all combined. In this day and age, without quarterback play, you're going nowhere. So if you're going to invest in a second overall pick for a quarterback, you've got to make sure that you've got everything to do with developing that player. And they decided that the experience was going to come from the quarterback's coach, and we're going to have the offensive coordinator and the head coach of the team be rookies along with their quarterback. Sometimes it works.
And you know, now they have the dilemma, though. You're going to bring in what you hope is a bright offensive mind. And who's taking that job when Saleh is probably on his last year unless he gets them into the playoffs? Who?
I don't know. He might be, Michael, and I hate to say it because I'm with you. I think he's a good coach. I think he's a good coach in the wrong spot. Because it's so strange that you have a failure of a season and you know the problem. The quarterback. Michael, average quarterback play, they're a playoff team. Agree?
Mm-hmm.
Average quarterback play.
Yep.
They're a playoff team. So that's the issue. So am I going to not have my quarterback developed because, well, I don't want to hurt Saleh's feelings or I don't want to let Saleh go? I mean, if you have a chance to bring in somebody that you think can make your quarterback great and you get him in the room and he says, sorry, can't come here if Robert Saleh's the head coach, what do you do? Is it loyalty? I don't want to give up on my guy after 2 years. Or do you say to yourself, what if you talk to Sean Payton? Are you not gonna hire him because you don't want to let go of Robert Saleh? I mean, it's. I think he's a good coach, and I don't want to see anybody get fired, but I can't let him stand in the way of the development of my quarterback.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.